So, where to start?
The beginning.
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God? No? Anybody know which verse and which chapter and verse, or which book, chapter and verse that's one? No. No? John? No. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word was with God. John 1:1. Ha ha. You guys. Just because it says in the beginning doesn't mean Genesis. You guys are silly. We are going to talk about a little bit about Genesis today, though. But I digress.
No.
Yes. I don't even know how to start, really. The pastor was not feeling very well. So she called me.
So be ready, in season and out.
She said, I'm not going to make it. I'm not feeling too well. I need you to do this for me. I was like, all right, I got it. And by I got it, that means she told me that on, what day was it that she called us, called me up, Pastor?
Wednesday.
Was it Wednesday?
Wednesday?
It was Thursday that she told me. Thursday? It may have even been Friday that you told me that you'd like me to preach for you. No? It was Thursday? Okay. So she calls me up on Thursday and she says, okay, well, I'm not feeling too well. I'd like you to take over for me. So I immediately did absolutely nothing until yesterday. Which is how you do it. That's how you get yourself prepared, right? No, you're fine. So, man, that wore me out today. So, yeah, I gave no attention to this thing. I thought about it. I tried. I was working. I was so busy. I've been really busy at work, and you guys know how it is. You got work, and you got the house, and you got the family, and you got the car, and you got the bills, and you got folks that are wanting your attention, and people that are needing your affection, and if you don't pay attention to them, then you're the one that's in the wrong, even though they're the ones that are leeching up off of you, and they got your bills coming, and all of this noise. Everybody's got that, right? Every single person has got that. And in this whole thing, all that we have is, I feel like an ungrateful child, like a kid that just takes everything for granted. Like I just want this now. This is just what I want. I'm like, okay, but you know, as kids, and we used to do that. All of us have done it, and those of us who are still kids, you guys, the one behind you, he's not even paying attention. He's playing on this video game? Huh? Boy, we've been talking about you this whole time. You ain't even paid attention. Lord have mercy. So, we've all done it at some point. And those kids, you guys that know everything, you guys are still doing it. Where you just expect, you know? I was coming up and we didn't have a lot of money. So I just expected stuff. And I think that my mother did an amazing job, because thinking back now, we had it rough. We were living in a bad spot. She was on government assistance, even though she was working. And she worked and worked and worked. There was one point where she had four jobs at the same time, trying to make ends meet, because she was a very proud woman. And as a very proud woman, as I don't know if you Mexicans know, that's how we are. Very proud people. Just kind of built into us. It's in the DNA. Very proud woman. And what she ultimately wanted, she wanted to not be on government assistance. That's what she wanted. That was her goal. That's why she worked four jobs. So she did it. And she worked 80 hours a week. She worked every day but Sunday. And at Sunday, it was church. We would get up early. We'd go to church. We'd stay there afterwards. We'd come home and eat. And then we'd go back to church. And then we'd stay there late, and we'd come home and go to sleep and start all over again. So Sunday was another work day. So 80 hours a week, four jobs, 6 days a week, plus church, which was all day long. And she made just enough money to get off of welfare, but not enough money to actually be able to make ends meet. We couldn't afford insurance. We stopped going to the dentist. If God forbids one of us got sick, Mom was going to have to work even more overtime because we couldn't afford, you know, the doctor's bills. But I was oblivious. had no idea that that was going on. That's a good parent for you. That is a good parent for you. Until I moved out of the house and I started paying my own bills and I really realized, man, this world really don't care about me. This is a hard place. It's not just, hey, I can have, let me have. It's not that. I realized that, man, she had a rough job and she did an amazing job of just shielding us. You know, I think like a mother hen grabbing the chicks or a goose or a duck, you know, open up your wings and they kind of run up under you and they're like, oh, it's nice and cozy and nice and warm and I'm getting fed and this is awesome. And they have no idea that there's cars flying around and rain is beating down on the mother and she's going without to make sure their chicks have it. And that's really amazing to me. And what is most amazing was that we really didn't get a lot of help. You know, I had older brothers and sisters who helped out as much as they could, but they had their own family to do. And she didn't have brothers and sisters who were in the immediate area that were able to help or willing or whatever, you know, I'm not really sure exactly, but we didn't get a lot of help. So she turned to the church. And the problem with turning to the church is that despite the fact that God is ahead of the church, God is very much a gentleman, so he doesn't intervene in human affairs very often. And that means when the church gets to running and mucking, they just muck and run. And that's, you know, they're about their own business. So when mom go, okay, I need help from the church. All right, that's great. I'm going to need you to clean the bathrooms. And I'm going to need you to take care of the kids. I'm going to need you to pick these people up on your way into church. I'm going to need you to take these people home on your way to church. We're going to have some services at your house. And the pastor was very eager to learn. She was an amazing person. She reminded me a lot of Chencho. She was, if you need help, I've got your back. Whether or not she has the means to do it. Right? And so, like I said, when you turn to the church, the problem is a lot of times the church is run by people. And people are flawed. We all know it, right? We're all, not a single one of us is perfect, right? In fact, why don't we start with that? Why don't we go to Romans 3:23? So, people, we are not perfect. And we try to keep what's going on with God in the forefront. I mean, I like to think that I do anyways. And despite us trying to keep everything in the forefront, we get selfish, like I said earlier, like kids, you know, let me get, let me have. And it says right there on Romans 3:23, it says, for all are sinners and have fallen short of of God's glorious standard. That's what it says in my Bible. I'm reading the New Century Version. We have all fallen short of the glory of God, right? Everybody's fallen short. Nobody's perfect. And that's awesome that it's kind of built into our contract here. God gives us, you know, I know you're not perfect. That's okay, right? So we got this. My mom's struggling and trying to get help. And then I had my wayward years when I was in my middle to late 20s, early, middle, late 20s. When I was, you know, I was out of the house and the novelty hadn't worn off. I got my own place. I can stay up as late as I want. And I ate Captain Crunch for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And everything had A1 steak sauce on it. Guacamole. Mm-hmm. I always told myself, because I loved guacamole, I loved avocados, but they're expensive. And when you're on welfare, you don't have a lot of money. It's a treat. So I always say when I moved out, I was going to have for every meal. And I swear to you, the first month I was out of the house, every single day, I had it different sorts of ways. And I still do if I can, if I think about it, if I find some good ones. It's my favorite. But yeah, so I was out of the house, and I was like, woo, this is all me. And I was working a lot and going to school at the same time. And like I said, it was my time to have my wayward years. And every once in a while, I would notice that my pastor, my mother, would still struggle. So I'd help out where I could. But again, I was a little bit past the just give me taking things for granted age, you know, the early teenagers. I was in my early 20s. And if anybody interacts with early 20-year-olds or remembers a time as your early 20-year-olds, you're just selfish. Just absolutely self-absorbed, selfish. There's nobody important but you. The only time you call somebody is because you need something. There's no, hey, how are you doing? Unless it's, hey, how are you doing? Oh, by the way, this is what I need now. You know what I mean? Anybody have 20-year-olds, brothers, sisters, daughters, kids, you know, something like that knows that? It's like, ring, ring, ring. You look at the phone. You want something. You don't want to say hi. You're not worried about how I'm doing. I mean, you might ask me how I'm doing, but you're not really worried how I'm doing. You're stuck somewhere. You're in a position where you need help. You need some money. You need a place to stay. You need some food. You're looking for something. And that's where I was at that age. And like I noticed, my mother was still hurting a bit. So I tried to help her out where I could. I didn't do a great job, but I tried to help her out where I could. Give her a little money, take her out to dinner. I like to do that because she loves to go out and eat. And I got to thinking back to those times when we were kids where my mother would reach out to the church and all the church would say was, okay, let me help you, but it's going to cost you these favors. At least that's how I saw it. And I got to thinking, okay, well, why doesn't God jump in and help out? You know? I mean, he loves me, right? I try to help. Where's he at? You know? Pardon my grammar. But yeah, where is God? Why wasn't he helping? He wasn't. And all that we're told over and over is, God's not going to leave you. God's not going to forsake you. All you got to do is have faith. And I would think back to the times where I saw my mother living seriously. Like, I could say that some people live on faith. But, I mean, quite literally surviving on faith. My mother was stricken with an illness. It's called sarcoidosis, and it is an ailment of the lungs. It leaves a drastic amount of scar tissue in your lungs. It makes breathing very difficult, especially when you're in the throes and in the early onset. They say it's a 1 in 3 killer. They say you have, that's a rule of three. It either stays the same or it gets worse, but it doesn't get better. It's pretty much how it is. You're stuck with it. And it's similar, when it flares up, it's similar to asthma because, like I said, it's a lung ailment, so it makes it really, really difficult to breathe. It makes your lungs, it's hard for them to heal when they have something in there. So I was quite literally watching my mother struggle to breathe. And I saw her be forced out of her position at work. She had to stop working. She could not work. And it wasn't that she didn't want to work. Because I told you, 4 jobs at once. It's not that she couldn't work. In her head, she was ready to do it. And I remember watching her, broken and frustrated, because she couldn't take care of herself. I remember having so much anger in me the day that the bank sent repo men to come and pick her car up. And my mother had to grab onto me and keep me away from the guys who were coming to take the truck. All they were doing was their job. It's a crappy job if you think about it. Your job is to go and take people's stuff that they couldn't pay for. The repo man probably got a pretty rough spot. But I remember that I was in that spot. I was very, very upset. And I got to thinking, faith, you got to live on faith. Faith, 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 faith. She lived on faith, quite literally. That year, she worked the first several months. She made, mind you, two of them, not one, and you guys that know, 2 teenage boys who would eat everything. That year, she made $8,000. Not $80,000. Not the minimum, that's the minimum amount that is considered poverty level, which is for a family with a single parent and 2 children, $32,000. 8. 1/3 of the minimum poverty level. And I watched her struggle to get government assistance. Now, you are working just fine. You have to prove that you're not working now. So for a month, we had to go with nothing until they started giving us money to get food stamps. And then she wanted to get onto Social Security. And I watched her struggle with that. They denied her over and over. She had to go out and hire a lawyer to have them in court and prove and go to their doctors that she couldn't work. 4 jobs, 6 kids, house, car, dog, by herself. And now you're telling me that she doesn't want to work. Now I'm not going to give you anything. You just don't want to work. You can work. Absolutely furious. I saw this woman live on faith. And again, I moved out of the house and I was very selfish. And I was very angry with God. And it was difficult, you know. I would distract myself I was a young man, decent shape, you know, had friends about and guys come over and ladies come around and working all the time and going to school. And so I would distract myself pretty well. And I stopped going to church. And I stopped going to church because all I remember hearing was that all you need to do is live on faith. And if there was one person in this world who was going to be living on faith, it was my mother. And it wasn't because I heard people tell me, oh, your mom's got so much faith. No, I watched it happen. I lived through it. I watched her broken and sad. I watched her pick herself back up. I watched her quite literally drag herself across the floor one time because she couldn't stand up because she was hurting. I lifted her up onto my shoulders myself one time and got her into the car because she could not walk because she couldn't breathe to take her to the hospital. And she didn't want to go. Why didn't she want to go, you ask? Nowadays, she didn't want to go because she doesn't like to get poked, you know, and they tear you up in there. But this time, and I doubt she remembers this, I was the only one there with her in the car. This time, she said she didn't want to go to the hospital because she couldn't afford it. She couldn't breathe. She was suffocating to death. And because she didn't have money, she didn't want to go to the hospital. Living on faith, huh? Ooh, I was so angry. All you have to do is live on faith. So, it started to get better as we kind of grew up and grew out and grew into our own. My brother got a job and he was helping, and I was still giving money as well as I could, giving mom money as well as I could. You know, little things. I got her a cell phone and I pay for that, or help out with this or that, or get her license plate, take her out to eat, you know, little stuff is whatever I could do because I was going to school and I was working as much as I could, but it was minimum wage jobs. You know, you're not going to give a kid an amazing job when they're still in school and can't really give the company your time. So I would help out where I could. Throughout the whole thing, she never really lost it. She stayed true. I lost it. I was the one that decided that I was too good for it. I was the one that I was mad and I needed that proof. You know what I mean? All you got to do is live on faith. I heard you say that and I watched it happen. Why are you still struggling? Apparently, I wasn't the strongest one. Apparently. And you would think, after having watched my mother survive on faith, I would have noticed that she still survived. Because she did. She was still around, right? She was still cooking. She was still kicking. She had two kids in the house. It was her by herself, and she was not working. And somehow or another, she was still getting things handled. I remember there was a dear friend of mine at the time. His mother, she was getting government assistance, but she also got child support and alimony from her ex-husband for their three kids. And he was a fairly well-to-do gentleman. So he was constantly giving them money. So despite the fact that she didn't work and despite the fact that she was on welfare, she still had enough money to pay her bills and to take care of herself. Ooh, that drove me crazy too, because them were some terrible kids. They didn't mind. They didn't listen. They were god-awful. I loved that young man to death. He was my best, dearest friend. He taught me how to steal. He introduced me to the drugs with which I experimented when I was just out of high school. It was that kind of guy, you know? He was like, all right, well, you ain't got nothing left to do. You know, my dad gave me some money. And despite the fact that he lived in the same hood where I lived, I'm talking hood, like cats would run through his yard being chased by other people on occasion. I say cats, I mean guys, I mean folks. Like, I heard there was a cutoff. Is there a shortcut? I gotta go. And then, like, three other guys come by, a couple holding a stick, one with a knife. Where'd he go? We gonna come back for you if you don't tell us. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. I got nothing to do. So he lived in a rough neighborhood, too. He was at a bad spot, too. But they always had a little extra. And this lady, she didn't go to church. I don't know why she didn't go to church. She was a very strong, she had a lot of faith. So much faith to the point to where every time she got money, she would take 10% out of it and put it into a little box that had a little key in her bedroom. She would tithe. Now, she wouldn't give it to the church, though. But she would, because she wouldn't go to church. She never went to church. I don't know why she didn't go to church, and she still thought that she would tithe, but she did. So whatever. And she overheard me talking to my friend about, you know, the situations, you know, that we were facing at the time where my mother was out of work. And so she would come over every month when she got, you know, however many thousands of dollars that she would get, because she had three kids and an ex-husband that was doing all right for himself. He was a chemical engineer or something like that. And she would give mom her tithe. Like, here's $300. Here's $500. I hope it helps. Okay, bye. So despite the fact that I saw faith actually working, it wasn't enough. I was very hurt and very angry. And I didn't really know how to deal with it. So I filled up that hole that I had with whatever around me that I could find. Time with my friends, lots of work, lots of school, video games, people, girlfriends, you know, whatever noise that was around, I would grab a hold of it, and I would try to, I masked it as trying to help, you know, yeah, come over, I'll cook, yeah, let's, yeah, you got nowhere to go, swing by, yeah, blah, 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 right? So I tried to keep it as good, but just angry and avoiding the whole thing. Didn't want to go to church. Didn't have time for it. I actually opted to work on Sundays so that I could avoid it. Because I needed an excuse for my mother. Because, let's be honest, she beat me up when I was a kid, so I still respected her. Whether or not I was going to listen, I still respected her that much. So all of that goes by. And after all this time, I'm sitting here and I'm like, okay, why? You know, why is all this noise? Why faith? Why do you tell me to live on faith and when I watch it, it's people still struggle? Why is faith only enough to survive? That's what I really wanted to know. Why is it that you can just pour every single bit of yourself into a belief of something that you cannot see because you're told to? And that goes against every single grain of anything that is in a human being. Unless I can see it, I don't believe it. But faith says the exact opposite. Don't see it, but know it's there. Why? Why is it that I can do exactly what you told me and all I get to do is survive? So, things start to turn around for Mom. She starts to get better. And now she's doing pretty good. Every once in a while, she'll have a flare-up. Like recently, she's got a little bit of sickness. And there was times where this thing acted up so harshly inside of her lungs that it would affect other organs in her body. She's had to have open-heart surgery at one point because of the sarcoidosis. She's had to have been... Countless times, I'd go in and hang out at the hospital before and after work because she was... That's where she was. I got nothing else to do. Okay, bye, mijo. We'll see you later. Come back and see me tomorrow, because I'll just be right here in this hospital bed, living on faith, surviving, right? Surviving. Why is it that from faith you're just allowed to survive? I don't know. I've done some studying, I've done some life looking, I've done some soul searching, I've asked over and over and over again. And honestly, I still don't know. I cannot tell you why. But faith isn't about survival. And faith isn't about asking questions. Faith is about knowing that it's going to be all right. That's what I figured out. I don't know why bad things happen to good people. Was it Socrates? Socrates, one of the great thinkers. He came up with the concept of logical thought processes, or thought processes. And he said, if God is benevolent, why is there evil? If God cannot stop evil, why is he omnipotent? If God does not want to stop evil, how is he benevolent? And if God can't see it, and that's why he doesn't stop it, how is he omnipresent? Why do we call him God? That's a very logical and well thought out way to think about that. Because seriously, it is very, very easy for our human minds to rule out the concept of something stronger, something bigger than us, right? It's really, really simple to do that. But If any of us have ever learned anything, and I can tell you that I have, it is when you take the easy road that you actually fail. However, that is built into our contract. It is built into our contract. Let's turn to Luke 8:13. Let's talk about Jesus for a moment. Luke is an amazing book, really. If you guys go through it, especially if you go through all of the Gospels. If you go through all the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, or start with John, then go to Matthew, Luke, and then Mark, and then read Luke again. Actually, go to read Acts as well, then read Luke again. You'll kind of see that the tone that Luke takes with things, you'll see that he was a very, very intelligent man.
Physician.
He was a physician, in fact, yes. He was not only was he intelligent, but he was very well educated. He was from a very well-to-do family. From a well-to-do family, you know it because, again, he was a physician. Just like back in the day, a physician was a well-sought-out person who was of high stature, very well-educated, and that means that they had to have the money to get to that position. And back in the day, it wasn't just money. You had to be really smart, and you had to come from a very strongly rooted family in order to be able to become a physician. Nowadays, if you got the money and you got the smarts, you can go to college, you can be a doctor. Back then, there was some background things that they had to follow. He's a very, very intelligent man, and he takes Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Matthew was a Jew. He was an educated man also. He was a tax collector. Mark was, again, a Jew. John, same. John was actually brother to Jesus, right? He's a carpenter's son. What was Mark's position? Was he a fisherman as well? No, that was Simon.
He
and Peter were just buddies. Okay, so he was also a Jew though. He was they're all of Jewish descent. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But Luke was not a Jew. Luke was a Greek. He was a Greek by birth, by descent, by education. That was his thing, and so he didn't know the background story of what was going on with Judaism. So Judaism is really, really hard bent and felt down from, they follow from Adam to Abraham and Noah to Abraham on to Isaac, Jacob, and all those guys, and they follow David, and their big guy was Abraham, right? And Moses. Moses was, woo, that's their guy, right? And so and they knew all of this. They knew that all you have to do is follow God Almighty, and he will come down and smash what needs smashed. And so long as you're standing there, you're good, right? That's what they knew. They knew that God Almighty was great. And then they found out that Jesus was his Messiah. He was God incarnate. So it was really easy for them to transition into that. So when you start right off, like I just quoted John 1:1. John was his brother. He was very, very associated with Jesus. They knew each other really, really, really closely, right? They grew up together. They knew one another. And the very first verse of John, he says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." And he's talking about Jesus. He says, "In the beginning, God spoke, and God's intent is what created things. And that intent is who became Jesus on earth." That's what he's saying in that one. So he knows all about this. But Luke didn't know about that stuff. Luke didn't know about all that things that were going on with God Almighty. To Luke, he was Grecian, so he studied Greek philosophies. And first he studied Greek mythologies, but then at that point they became mythologies. They became old religions. And the new way to think was using philosophy, because Socrates and those guys were around. He used to hang out with a cat named Gamaliel. And they followed radical new ways to think using logic. And that's where Socrates came up with that thing. He said, "How can God exist if everything that you say about him is being proven in his actions to be incorrect?" Right? So this is, at this point, the Jews are still following blind faith. Now, mind you, their blind faith is following a written word, which is a law. But for him, he followed strong critical thinking. It is very much a mantra of mine that a man without one will forever be at the mercy of a man with a logical meaning of thought, a logical path of thought. If you don't have a way to think critically, then you're always going to be suffering at the person who knows how to think critically. They'll be able to be ahead of you. So until you teach yourself how to think very logically and very critically, you're not going to be able to get ahead in life. And that's what these guys were doing. This is radical new stuff. So how is it that somebody that could, with all this education, with all this learning, with all this lack of background of understanding of God Almighty, could follow Jesus? Now, not only did he follow Jesus, Luke never actually saw Jesus. Matthew, Mark, John, Simon, Peter, I can't go through all the 12 of them right now, but all those guys, they quite literally walked next to Jesus. Quite literally, like they had lunch with him. They went over and helped him out. They picked him up when he was falling down. They prayed with him. Seriously, like on their knees, Jesus is right there praying with him. Luke went from town to town looking for Jesus, and he was always a day late. So Araya says he was the black guy. He was the Mexican, yeah. He was on Mexican time. He's with the rest of us. All right, I'm here, Jesus. He left yesterday. Dang! But he never actually got to see that. So, not only did he not understand Judaism, not only did he not have a very strong foundation in the ideas and the concepts of God Almighty, not only did he have to be logically worked into understanding God Almighty, he had to fight his logical mind to figure out a way to prove all of this stuff. On top of that, he never actually even got to see Jesus. What's up?
What a better person, though, to have
Exactly. Still, he felt so strongly that he wrote down all of the things that he found out about Jesus, and that's what we got right here. Now, you'll see in Luke, in John, you see the grace that is Jesus. You see the benevolence that is God Almighty incarnate into a flesh. You see the imagery and the words that he uses. Absolutely beautiful, the way that he shows Jesus interacting with people on a spiritual level and the things that happen spiritually with him. In Mark, you see the action of Jesus. You see the impact that Jesus made. You see the things that really like have to happen in order for the future that Jesus planned to come about. You see the way that the people that he touched and the times that he touched them, so that it really shows that this was something that was going to grow into right now the second biggest religion in the world, and it's the way that people live their lives. It's an amazing thing, Christianity, right? And all started from that one guy. In Matthew, you see Jesus in a slightly different light. You see Jesus interacting with people on a human level. You don't see Jesus, you know, you don't see the spirituality as much, and you don't see the impact, but you see him emotionally drawing people in so that they realize that there's comfort. There's not just impact, and there's not just spiritual, but there's something inside of you guys. But for Luke, you see the only time you see Jesus' human ties, right? Jesus ties to a person in Luke. And all the other ones, okay, Jesus is God, this is all great, cool, let's go. All of them start like that. In Luke, he talks about how Jesus was born. He talks about what he found, how the Magi, the wise men, studied the stars and were able to get the science behind the symbology that was the coming of the Christ. You see the way that the world interacted. Yeah, like a textbook. The way that the world interacted with the coming of Jesus. And along those lines, this is the book where you will see the very, very subtle hints of the falterings that are the human characteristic. And we're going to see this right here. Now, before I go on, Jesus, let me just ask you guys, what did Jesus come to do? Hit me. Save the world. Anybody else?
Might have life.
Show us life eternal. Yes? Anything else? Because God said he would. It's very good. Jesus is all here to do all that awesome stuff, right? Now, I'm going to tell you what Jesus was not here to do. Jesus was not here to be a Superman. That's what most of the Jewish cats at the time were thinking. That's why they were mad at Jesus. Jesus, he can't just come in here riding on a donkey. If he's the Messiah, he's not to be on a steed, white and shining, just light coming off of the horse. You know how you guys see in the movies? This for no reason, the horse is glowing, and my man takes off his helmet, and his hair is flowing, and he's got a sword that's always sharp, and even though he stabs stuff, there's no blood on him, and he could fall, and he doesn't get grass stains on him or nothing. None of that. Jesus, that's the Messiah. No, they were mad because Jesus was a human. Jesus, my Messiah is not a human being. You must be crazy. He's a Superman. But no, Jesus did not come to be a Superman. And why is that? Jesus came to be an example. And if we have to live up to Superman, we will never have in our mind the idea that we'll be able to succeed. Because you can't be Superman. Jesus came as a regular human being, tempted the same way, hurt, cussed out, smacked, quite literally, thrown stuff thrown at him, threatened his life. That's why Jesus came. He did not come to be a Superman. He came to be an example for us, to follow this. And he told us over and over. Let's go back to here. So we got this parable here, right? This is the story about seed. The farmer goes out and he plants some seed, and it falls in good soil, and it falls in bad soil, and some of the seed, it gets eaten up, right? And the weeds choke out. So you guys know the parable, right? I can paraphrase it. You guys know what I'm talking about? He throws a seed, and he waits for the seed to fall in good soil. And the idea behind this one is that when somebody gives you those little gems of knowledge from the Bible, is that you're supposed to till the soil that is your heart so that when the seed hits it, it plants firmly, gets strong roots, and the weeds don't tear it up, and the sun doesn't burn it up, and it cultivates. It turns into fruit, right? That's what it is. But what we're going to do is we're going to read 13. The seed that fell on rock is like those who hear God's teaching and accept it gladly, but they don't allow the teaching to go deep into their lives. They believe for a while, but then trouble comes, and they give up. That's where I was. I was ready for it. I was raised kid, little kid in church. I'm not going to lie to you, I was forced to go to church most of the time. Quite literally kicking and screaming. it was hard to get me to go to church, but still it fell in my heart and it was coming up and it was ready to do it, but it didn't. Now, why would Jesus talk about these guys though? Why would Jesus say that this is the type of seed that it is and this is the type of stuff? Why would he give us all these examples? So let's talk about that. We all know, for the most part, this parable. And we all know that the different types of soil are different people, right? Different types of people. You got the stubborn ones, the ones that just falls on rocks and bounces off, right? You got the ones who are weak-minded and they get sucked in by the people around them. Those are the ones where it fell down and the weeds choked it out, right? And you got the ones that... the sun bakes them out. You got, you know what I'm talking about? Those are ones where it falls on good soil, and then you just get burned out by paying too much attention to it, right? And you got the ones that there's no light, so they die off. And then you got these guys here, and it says it falls on rocks, and they accept it gladly, but they don't let it sink into their lives. Why would Jesus tell us about these people? It's because... It's very much my belief that of all these people that he talked about, seed that fell on the roadside, the seed that fell on the rocks, the seed that fell on the thorny weeds, the seed that fell on good ground, it is my belief that these aren't different types of people. This is all the same person. Just like when I was a kid, I'm not going to lie to you, I was probably adorable. I was a fantastic, beautiful little child. But everybody is at a child, right? They cry a bit, but oh, and you ask anybody that's got the kids out the house, you're like, I just want them to come back to when the time there was a baby, right?
You remember the photos that people see?
Yeah. Yeah, you were the cutest little... Yeah, exactly, that one. What happened? You used to be so cute, yeah. Everybody's the adorable baby, and everybody's the problem toddler, and then everybody's got the great kid that's talented and got the whole life ahead of him, and then everybody is that annoying child that nobody wants to be hanging around. And everybody is... all these people, we're all the same one. Just like I said, the young teenagers who just want gimme, gimme, gimme and take everything for granted, The older teenagers and 20-year-olds who are selfish and self-absorbed and want absolutely nothing to do unless you're going to be giving them something. And then finally, after life beats you up pretty good, you turn into a decent human being, hopefully. Right? Right. We're all that. We are. This is us. This whole parable, all four of these types of soil, that is us. We are that person. Into our contract is built in the idea that we are the person that allows other things to come in and choke out our seed, our seedlings. Sometimes it falls on your good soil and it's fantastic and you hear it and you accept it. But then trouble comes along and you got to live on faith and you just don't want to. We're all allowed to have this at the point, at some point. We're all allowed to let this sink in, to let us hit ourselves. And woo, faith, I'm down. And then you realize faith doesn't mean extravagance. Sometimes faith means being hungry. Sometimes faith means being sad or beat up or hurt, brokenhearted, all by yourself. Yeah? Sometimes that's what faith means. But we have to remember our faith, nonetheless. Because faith is how we are survived. Right? At the end of it, the faith is how you actually make it through. It's really, really difficult to watch all that terrible stuff happen. And it's even more difficult to know that God is omnipresent, omnipotent, all-powerful, all-being, able to part seas and create stuff and snuff out the whole world. But he's just not going to do it. Right? That's just how it is sometimes. But faith isn't just that. Faith is also how we keep moving. Because if you just let it go, you're not just going to be letting go of your faith. If you truly let go, you let go of your life. Right? It's the belief that makes it okay. Right? We have to remember our faith. It's okay for it to fall on good soil sometimes. And then troubles come along and it gets snuffed out. It's okay for it to get burned up by the sun sometimes. It's built into us. We're not perfect. We're not supermen. Right? Everybody gets tempted. But our faith, once we remember it, is still there. Everybody is given a measure of faith, right? Faith is an interesting thing because it is, one, a gift, and it's also a fruit, right? We all know that? So the gift means what? You just get it, right? And what is a fruit? Exactly. A fruit. A fruit is cultivated. Everybody gets all the seeds you want. That's faith. But you don't get tomatoes until you plant them into the ground and you take care of them. Right? And even if you plant them into the ground, or those seeds fall on your heart, and as soon as trouble comes along, they die, you still have seeds. We have to remember our faith. And our faith is just strictly believing. Let's turn to Genesis 15:6. We're going to talk about the father of faith. Who is that? Anybody? Hit me. Abraham. That's right. You got it. The father of faith. Why is he the father of faith? Because God said, your 90-year-old wife is about to have a kid, dog. Yeah, right. Right? 90 years old. Woo, you must be crazy. That's not why he's the father of faith? It's getting... Oh, there's that too. He lived his whole life by faith. You're nitpicking now. He was going to kill his kid. I don't know if that's the father of faith. That's more the father of obedience. I mean, because that's kind of rough. Can you imagine the return trip? That had to be an awkward conversation. Ooh, coming down the mountain. Dude, what was that all about? Seriously. Anyways, okay. So, 15:6. So we're talking about Abraham here. And I want to recruit a couple of people. One person to read the New International Version. One person to read the King James Version. So at this point, Abraham is being told, because he's already got one son, Ishmael, right? And that was the one from Hagar. That was not the promised one. He said, your wife's going to have a kid. But he went out of his way, and he had a kid from Hagar. He's trying to push God along. And so he's got this kid, and he says, God comes down and said, I'm going to give you a son. He's going to inherit everything. He said, dude, just, I have a son. Let him be that, because my wife is old, and she's been barren her whole life. This is going to be rough. He said, no, I told you. He said, Ishmael's going to be a good guy. I'm going to bless him. He's your seed. I told you I was going to bless your seed, but he's not the one that's going to inherit everything. It's going to be the one that I give you from your wife. So what does he say? He says in 6, somebody tell me.
And he believed in the Lord.
And he counted it to him righteousness. There you go. King James, or New International Version, somebody?
Abraham believed the Lord, and he credited it to him, as righteousness.
Abraham believed the Lord, and he credited it to him as righteousness. This is one of the things where I really appreciate having both versions of the Bible, or multiple versions of the Bible, because the King James Version is an older language. So let's break that one down again. I'm just looking at the first couple of words. He says, all right, this is what is going to happen. And in the New Testament, New International Version, it said, and Abraham believed the Lord, and the Lord counted that against Abraham as righteousness. Abraham believed the Lord. Let's go back a step and listen to the King James Version. It said, God said, I'm going to give you a child, and it's going to be the blessing. And in the King James Version, it says, and Abraham believed in the Lord, and it was counted as righteousness. What's the difference between believing the Lord and believing in the Lord? You guys seeing it? It's kind of a subtle difference. Let's say Benny tells me, Jerry. Yes, ma'am.
Jerry.
Yes, ma'am. Oh, you're telling me. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. So let's say Benny tells me, Jerry, when you come home from work, I'm going to have dinner for you. And I believe Benny, right? Apparently I'm silly. I shouldn't believe him. No, she tells me that. So I believe Benny. That means that this one instance, Benny is going to have dinner for me ready on the table, right? However, if I was to say I believe in Benny, in the relationship that we have, it's a little bit bigger. You guys seeing me? Are you guys following it? He didn't just believe God this one instance. He's saying he believed in God. It's not just I'm promising you this kid. I'm going to be all right with this kid. No, it's an outside looking in sort of story. This isn't the one-on-one. This is somebody telling the story of Abraham. And it said Abraham believed in God. So it doesn't matter what God said. And it doesn't matter how he said it. It doesn't matter whether or not he said it. He told him once already. Abraham believed in God. That's where his faith was constantly being tried over and over again. But when he believed in God, now let's talk about faith for a second. Now if he had faith, Abraham's the father of faith, right? Woo, faith. He's the one that had it. How many times did God tell him he was going to have a kid? Over and over and over again. So what did he do? He went and knocked up Hagar, right? Why is it that here it says, after he's already had this kid, now this kid is outgrown, the boy is hunting, he's coming up on his own right now, right? This is not a child, this is not an infant, he wasn't just born, he's already a kid now. Now it says, I believed in him. At this point, Abraham is remembering his faith. Abraham is the father of faith. Abraham is the one where faith comes from. But Abraham had to be reminded that he believed in God. You guys following me? Even at the very beginning, the father of faith, the beginning of all that is Christianity, it was built into that contract that we are still human. That's why Jesus had to come around. Because up until right now, God has just been God Almighty, do this because I said to do it. But we falter. Yeah, and if you don't, woo-wee. But we falter. We falter because we are all different types of soil depending on the season. Right? But we all have our seeds in us. We all have faith. We just don't always have tomatoes. Right? You guys follow me? And even back then, Abraham didn't have tomatoes. The next one, we're not going to turn to it. It's Hebrews. It's Paul, actually, talking a little bit about Abraham. He's saying that this was counted as faith against Abraham. Abraham was given a credit because of his faith. But Abraham was given a credit because of his faith, the faith that he had to remember. Abraham was given credit against his faith, the faith that he had forgotten about. Abraham was given credit against his faith, the faith that he not only forgot about, but he went and took things into his own hands to push God along because it wasn't happening as fast as he wanted it to. Abraham got credit for faith that he straight up forgot that he had. Abraham was given credit for tomatoes when all Abraham had was seeds in his hand. You guys seeing that? Think about that. Think about going to the store. All right, I want 3 pounds of tomatoes. All right, here's 2 seeds. That'll be $8. Whoa, hold on a second. Right? But Abraham was still given credit because we're human beings. Even when God was dealing with the father of faith, when God was creating the whole tribe of Israel and building up the world so that it could be handled by this all-powerful, omnipotent being turned into a regular old human being, he knew that he was dealing with people. He knew that we are gods. We're made in God's image. A human being is made in God's image. You are a god. You're not the god of the whole universe. Your universe is in your head. The problem is that God's been doing this for a lot longer than we have. So he knows how to make it happen. We're still struggling and putting along trying to pull things together. And when you don't see it in front of your head, right there, then it's not happening and you just lose faith. But despite the fact that you lose faith, that universe in your head still has that seed in it, and you can still remember your faith. Yeah? Times get rough. And if you lost your faith, don't beat yourself up. David didn't. let's turn to Psalms 1:3. We're getting close to our finish here. I'm sorry, Psalms 40. My apologies. Psalms chapter 40, and we're going to read verse 1 through 3. We're going to stick in Psalms for the last little bit. Psalm 40. So this was written for Shelah, I believe, was the guy's name. He was one of David's generals, one of David's military generals, who was turned into one of David's music leaders. That's kind of wild. This is not the first time. This is the first time this happened. This is not the only time this happened. Actually, that's a big thing in Japan during the disbanding of the samurai. Everybody knows the samurai, right? They're the warriors in Japan, in feudal Japan. They were like, bam, they rule stuff with a fist, right? They were the cats. Nobody messed with the. Yes, they. Yeah, that's when everything went down. Everything went down for the samurai, and they were disbanded after Western influence came into. To Japan, after people were starting to trade around the world, after the trains came through, that was huge improvement in technology, right? And at that point, they wanted to stick to the old ways, but the emperor wanted to follow the new ways because that's the way the world was going. But the samurai, they didn't care for that too much, so they were disbanded. There was actually a fight between the Japanese feudal lord, the samurai, and the Japanese government. They made a movie about it, yeah. They actually brought in a bunch of military cats and taught them how to be soldiers, Western soldiers, despite the fact that they were already the most complex warriors who were studying the arts of war for centuries at this point, right? That was no room for that. The world's moving in a different direction. You guys got to go, right? After they were disbanded, a lot of the military leaders were given positions in government or positions in the industry. And those companies are still thriving till today. Because you had cats who were strict, who were raised to take pride in what they did and to push forward that industry. And this is the same thing that happened here. David had his generals with him. Strict military cats. They didn't take crap from nobody, and they had absolute loyalty to whatever David said. And he took them from being leaders, warriors, ready to hack and slash. And he said, your most important job is to lead praise and worship. Take that strict military mind that knows how to push and drive and get the best out of everything you touch to the praise and worship. He wrote this, but this is a psalm that David wrote. I waited patiently for the Lord. He turned to me and heard my cry. He lifted me out of the pit of destruction, out of the sticky mud. He stood me on a rock, and he made my feet steady. He put a new song in my mouth, a song of praise to our God. Many people will see this and worship him, and then they will trust in the Lord. Why do you think he was saying that? Why did he have to wait patiently? Do you think he actually had to sit there and wait for God? No, he was in the military. He was on the run. He was going, hacking and slashing his way throughout. I'm not exactly sure of the time frame. This was either written when he was under Saul's command or when he was running from Saul. But it was a rough time for David. And he said, I had to wait patiently, and he had to hear my cry. He was crying. Why was he crying? Let's go to Psalms 103:1. Why was he crying? Well, let's see. He was in a rough spot. 103:1. There's a song that does this. Is this the one? No. I'm sorry. Maybe. Yes. Let me see. Let me find it. That's 37? Okay, well, I wrote down 103. The one I was thinking, what is it, Mom? Praise the Lord, O my soul. That's 103. Okay, that's the one that I wanted. Yep. There you go. Bless the Lord, O my soul. Now, let's go through the grammar in this statement. Bless the Lord, O my soul. What is he saying? Most folks will think that it's kind of like How Great Thou Art, that song. And sings my soul, my Savior unto thee, how great thou art. It says, in that song he says, then my soul opens up out of me and it says, how great thou art, Lord. Not in my head, not this one. Not in my head, not this one. Personally, this is a desperate and destitute prayer to God, my thought. I'm not exactly sure when this was written, but I believe it was written when he was on the run. And he's not saying, oh, my soul is opening up. And it's saying, bless the Lord. He's saying, I forgot where I am. I don't know what's happening right now. I am terrified, and I forgot my faith. Soul, don't forget your faith. Bless the Lord. No matter what. Yeah, he's realized that he is all out of tomatoes. But I remember, I got seeds. He had to force himself to remember that he still has his faith. And he's saying to his soul, bless him, no matter what. Get down on your knees, do something. You're not allowed to just sit there, right? We're going to finish off with 37:1. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So despite all of that, despite all the noise, despite all the nonsense, we're still in a spot where sometimes we have to remember that we have seeds. And it usually doesn't happen until you're hungry, right? If you got a bunch of plants, you harvest all your plants, and then you got a bunch of tomatoes in the house, and you're like, oh, this is so awesome. I'm tearing up some tomatoes. This is great. And several days go by, you can some maybe, and you got tomatoes for months, and everything is great. And you're like, oh, crap, that was my last can of tomatoes yesterday. I'm real hungry. Look at your plant, and your plant's dead. What am I going to do? I'm panicking. Right? Are you guys following me? You got all this good stuff coming in at you, and you forget that you don't need your faith when all this good stuff is happening. Right? Times are good. You got money rolling in. Woo, Clinton's in office. You guys remember that? Back during that time when Bill Clinton was in office, for some strange reason, it was just good times for the country. I didn't need three jobs. I had one job, and I was doing all right. I was going to school and whatnot, and then some other stuff happened, you know, and the economy starts taking a little bit of a turn, right, and I know I lost a good bit of money, and then all of a sudden, everybody around here is struggling. But that happens. There's never a thing, that old adage, what comes up must come down. Why do they say that? Because you can't just always go up. There's got to be that harsh stuff. Right? You gotta have enough. Enough to remember that sometimes you still need. Yeah? So when your faith is all gone, your plant is dead, we have to force ourselves to remember that you still have seeds that you can plant. And let's go through this guy and we'll be done with it. I think I'm gonna read the whole chapter. I'm reading out of the New Century Version. Don't be upset because of evil people. Don't be jealous of those who do wrong. Because like grass, they soon will dry up. Like green plants, they soon will die. Trust the Lord to do good. Live in the land and feed on truth. Enjoy serving the Lord, and he'll give you what you want. Depend on the Lord, trust him, and he'll take care of you. Then your goodness will shine like the sun, and your fairness will shine like noonday sun. Wait and trust the Lord. Don't be upset when others get rich or when someone else's plans succeed. Don't get angry. Don't get upset. It only leads you to trouble. Evil people will be sent away, but those who trust in the Lord will inherit the land. In a little while, the wicked will be no more. You may look to them, but they will be gone. People who are not proud will inherit the land and will enjoy complete peace. The wicked make evil plans against good people. They grind their teeth at them in anger. But the Lord laughs at the wicked because he sees that their day is coming. The wicked draw their swords and bend their bows to kill the poor and helpless, to kill those who are honest. But their swords stab at their own hearts and their bows break. It is better to have a little and be right than to have much and be wrong. The power of the wicked will be broken, and the Lord supports those who's right. The Lord watches over the lives of the innocent, and their reward will last forever. They will not be ashamed when trouble comes. They will be full of in times of hunger. But the wicked will die. The Lord's enemies will be taken like flowers of the fields. They will disappear like smoke. The wicked borrow and don't pay back. But those who are right give freely to others. Those who the Lord blesses will inherit the land. But those he curses will be sent away. When people's steps follow the Lord, God is pleased with their ways. If they stumble, they will not fall, because the Lord holds their hand. I was young, now I'm old. But I've never seen good people be left helpless, or their children begging for food. Good people always lend freely to others, and their children are a blessing. Stop doing evil and do good, so you will live forever. The Lord loves justice and will not leave those who worship him. He will protect them, but the children of the wicked will die. Good people will inherit the land and will live forever. Good people speak with wisdom, and they say what that is fair. The teachings of God are in their heart, and they will not fail them. The wicked watch for good people so that they may kill them. But the Lord will not take away his protection or let the good people be judged guilty. Wait for the Lord's help and follow him. He will honor you and will give you the land, and you will see the wicked sent away. I saw a wicked and cruel man who looked strong like a healthy tree in good soil, but he died and was gone. I looked for him, but he could not be found. Think of the innocent person and watch the honest one. The man who has peace will have children to live after him. But sinners will be destroyed, and in the end the wicked will die. The Lord saves good people. He is their strength in times of trouble. The Lord saves them. He saves them from the wicked because they trust in him for protection. No matter what, as angry as you get, even though faith means sometimes all you get to do is survive, we have to remember our faith. It's always there. That's what I had today.